Representative Phillips, let's start with the nuts and bolts of the proposed Carbon Dividend Act. What would it accomplish?
Well, Paul, it's going to accomplish what I think we need most, which is to provide incentives and disincentives and then let the market move us to where we want to go, which is to reduce CO2 emissions and migrate to a clean energy economy. There seems to be universal agreement on that. And the notion that I'm co-sponsoring is the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, and it would put a price on carbon, which is actually a bipartisan notion, and I want people to know that. The genesis is as much Republican as it is Democratic, and in this case, we're proposing a $15 per ton fee on carbon, and that would be entirely returned. The proceeds, which could be about $80 billion in the first year, would be returned wholly to taxpayers to the tune of about $1,000 per year for each family. And it the cost of fossil fuel products would rise as a result. For example, a gallon of gasoline may go up about 13 cents based on the fee in the first year. Again, the money is returned in the form of a dividend to all taxpayers. And it's a way to start putting a disincentive on further fossil fuel use and migrate to clean energy. It's a simple notion. It's a market-based notion. It does not grow government, and it reduces our carbon emissions. And that is exactly the type of policy, thoughtful bipartisan policy, that I think we need.
So here's a clip from your press release, a quote, Carbon Dividend Trust Fund for the American People to encourage market-driven innovation, clean energy technologies, and market efficiencies. So we create this fund, is your proposal, and then the money goes into that fund. What are some examples then of how that fund would be used to drive more technology that could help lower greenhouse gas emissions?
So Paul, in this case, all the money in this proposal that I'm co-sponsoring, all the dollars would go back to American citizens. And that's what's unique about it. It does not grow government, and it does not provide more dollars to federal programs, for example. And those dollars, what people do with those dollars, of course, is up to them. I think it will spur investment, and it will create a number of millions, perhaps over 2 million green energy jobs. But it's not a trust fund to benefit anything or anybody other than taxpayers right now. Now, I will say, I'm also giving some thought to whether or not we should modestly increase that fee and direct some of the proceeds to an infrastructure bill. As you might know, Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Schumer met with President Trump in the White House this week. They agreed on a $2 trillion infrastructure plan that right now has no funding. And I think this could be an interesting way to accomplish both, because we surely need both.
You mentioned bipartisan support. Do you think you'll get the necessary votes to get this through and perhaps make it law?
Well, I'll tell you, Paul, nothing, as you well know, nothing is easy in Congress. But that's a challenge that I'm taking seriously and very optimistic about. And this is a unique bill in that it has a number of co-sponsors, everyone from Barbara Lee, who is one of the more progressive members of the Democratic caucus, to Francis Rooney, the Republican from Florida. It's a notion that the American Enterprise Institute, the conservative think tank, supports, and even supported by George Shultz and Howard Baker, former secretaries of state, who devised a very similar plan with their group called the Climate Leadership Council. And it is remarkably bipartisan, and it's one that I think it is the most likely to generate support on both sides of the aisle. But like anything else, it has to be sold, it has to be promoted. And we, not just those in Congress, but we in our communities have to start promoting the solution to one another if we're going to build the consensus to get it done.
We've seen tremendous progress, Representative Phillips, in reducing greenhouse gas emissions in the electric power sector. We see Minnesota producing 25% of our electric power from renewables. It seems like the biggest opportunity now for further reductions is in transportation. How does America achieve similar reductions in the transportation sector over the next decade?
Well, I favor notions like I think we should have a prominent, very innovative, high-speed rail network in the United States. Our competitors around the world have surpassed us broadly. So doing would significantly reduce emissions and also provide a very high-speed very connected America to many who right now don't have access to transportation. And then this notion of pricing carbon provides a disincentive to consume fossil fuels. So it will, in theory, reduce force both businesses and individuals to look for more efficient modes of transportation. And this is a way to begin the migration. It is not a mandate. It is not an iron fist. It is simply putting a price on something that has a significant cost to us now and an extraordinary cost down the road. And that's because it's market-based. The market should figure it out. And I'm a believer in that. And it will do the same in transportation.
I'm curious about the political winds in the Republican Party in Washington, D.C., some of your colleagues in the Congress. We hear some people voicing more support and more understanding that these extreme weather events are on the rise and that that's turning costly for us. Do you sense that even behind the scenes, what will your colleagues say to you in terms of how they are viewing the current climate change situation and how we might be impacted by that going forward?
Well, Paul, it's becoming undeniable. And if people wish to argue the reasons why, they can do so. But it is time that we acknowledge truth. We take some bold stands. And I can tell you in my private conversations with, of course, Democratic colleagues and an increasing number of my thoughtful Republican colleagues, you know, we acknowledge what's going on. And it is deeply affecting American communities throughout the country, from the heartland to the coasts, and it's real. I'm sure that in no small part, Francis Rooney from Florida, the Republican from Florida, is supporting this notion because he sees what's happening in his state. With that said, it takes leadership and it takes consensus to get this done. And my hope is that our Republican colleagues start lining up to support something that, again, has Republican genesis, and that means pricing carbon and letting the market take charge. That is actually the way we build bridges in Congress and throughout this country. So I'm hopeful. We're not there yet, but it's these conversations, both on the airwaves and in neighborhoods and cul-de-sacs, that we have to start having.
Let's talk about opportunity. Change, even climate change, can sometimes bring opportunity. One example, this jobs boom that we've seen with renewable energy. Could climate change solutions be our next economic moonshot?
I think there's no question. Some studies indicate that if we pass this bill, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, that could spur over 2 million new jobs. I think that will be happening anyway because we are migrating. The good news is we have thoughtful enterprises around the country. Xcel Energy is taking a bold stand to invest in renewables, in no small part because we provided incentives over the last number of years for them to do the same thing. So I think we're on path, and I think there's an opportunity here that every state, whether it's a red state or blue state, can recognize that not only will these green energy jobs be more prevalent, but they will be high-paying jobs. And if we can create a thoughtful strategy as Americans to provide the right training to young people to enter these new jobs that are created, everybody wins, and there is a way to do so. And I can tell you also, as a new member of Congress, I've been very pleased with the collegiality between members of both sides of the aisle, especially in our freshman class. And I think there's a new ethos, a new spirit, and I think over time we are going to join hands and build a better economy, and most importantly, reduce our emissions and preserve our planet for our children and grandchildren.
We're seeing shifts in climate change opinion now. Yale and George Mason study says now that 6 in 10 Americans are either concerned or alarmed about climate change. What do you hear from Minnesotans about the desire for climate change action?
I hear every day from people throughout our state, not just in my district, that this is important to them. And I'll tell you who's making the most difference in Congress right now. It's young people. We see young people from middle schoolers through high schoolers and college students in the halls of Congress all the time, coming to our offices and making very impassioned pleas that we do something. And that makes me optimistic. You know, Minnesotans have taken conservation seriously for many years. We love our environment. It is not political. And I think Minnesota can be a real bellwether state for the rest of the country in leading that change. But as Americans, we are very good at often pointing out, at least from a policy perspective, we're quite adept at pointing out problems. Now is the time for solutions. And I'm one who wants to listen to any solutions. I don't care what the genesis is. Minnesotans are the same way. We listen to the best ideas. We tend to implement them. And I think I hope the country will look to us, and I want us to be a leader. And that's my intention.
We have a lot of successful Fortune 500 companies based in Minnesota, and I've interviewed several executives from those companies. Take a company like General Mills. It's been around for 150 years, and they used to produce their grain by milling with power from the Mississippi River. And they're moving forward on climate solutions. We see this with a lot of companies. In fact, that momentum seems to be much stronger than the momentum in Washington. Is there a disconnect there? And do you think your colleagues that have been reluctant are seeing these corporations move forward? And is that possibly an example for them?
Yeah, there is a disconnect, Paul, and I recognize it as well. And I've spoken with a number of the CEOs of our state's largest enterprises and reminded them of not just their responsibility, but the opportunity that exists for them to influence policymakers. And that's happening. And I could, the list of American corporations, multinational corporations that support the notion of pricing carbon would surprise a lot of people, including some of the biggest energy companies. So that is a massive opportunity. And by the way, that's part of a bigger conversation about business being the source of, a source of solutions for this country, not the source of problems. And, you know, I want to see this country move to compassionate capitalism. And what a wonderful and beautiful way to start with affecting climate change policy. And I do see the day coming. And I'm speaking with a number of those CEOs both here and around the country. And I'm hoping we can mobilize.
Finally, the House passed a bill, I believe this week, that would keep the U.S. in the Paris Agreement. What are the chances of that, given the landscape of the Senate and the White House these days?
Well, given the landscape of the Senate and the White House, unfortunately, the answer is unlikely, and it's appalling. The United States of America should be not just at the table, Paul, we should be leading. That is the America in which I grew up. It is what I aspire to. And I will say, though, that the power to proceed, if you will, really lies in the hands of every American to remind their representatives, not just in Washington, but in their own state houses, that this is important. And that's the type of American leadership I want to reconstitute, re-elevate. And I do think we're going to get there. I don't think in this Congress, because of the circumstances in the Senate and the White House, but over time, we shall. This is a statement of principles. It's a statement of the Democratic Party's principles that this is important. And I also foresee that climate change and addressing it with thoughtful policy is going to be one of the big drivers of the 2020 election. I hope it is. It deserves to be, because I think it's an existential threat, and not just to this nation, but surely to the entire world.
U.S. House District 3 Representative Dean Phillips, thank you for your perspective on ClimateCast today.
Thank you, Paul, very much.